I don't know if I told you this before, but in high school, I was in journalism both in my junior and senior year, and those experiences changed my outlook on content, writing, and media for life. Before journalism, all I knew how to do was write for myself. I wrote blogs and journal entries, and I shared intimate thoughts about being single and, you know, all the typical ramblings of a teenage boy. But after journalism, I learned how to write for others. I learned how to write for an audience and how to put my thoughts into words in hopes that it would not only change the conversation that we were having, but also our perception of reality. That's what journalism can do. Effective journalism can illuminate the truth, tear down corrupt figures, and uplift voices. Journalism is a skill and an art, and anyone who ventures into the cold, harsh world of journalism and reporting has my utmost respect. That respect is tenfold for today's guest, Cecilia Austin. Cecilia is a journalist and content creator with a passion for culture, music, politics, and all things Batman. She, like me, is a Bay Area native with an impressive portfolio of clients that include AARP, All Hip Hop, Swayze Universe, Houston Press, and she's interviewed huge names like Kevin Hart and Eva Longoria. She's also the founder of Yellow Bandit Media, a boutique writing agency that collaborates with brands and media platforms to provide content and consulting for creative professionals. Unfortunately, during our stream, a connection went out and we lost part of our 1.5 hour conversation. But fear not, Cecilia was a pleasure to speak with, and she'll be back another time to grace us with her wisdom. All right, you know the drill. Kick back, grab another horchata, and tune in to another installment of Lag Radio. Hey, 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 Cecilia. Thank you for joining the show. Can you tell us your name? Can you tell us what you do?
All right. Let me fix the camera. my name is Cecilia Austin, and I work as a journalist and content creator.
Very, very cool. I'm so glad that you stop onto the show. You know, we have so many different people from who work in social work and people who are visual artists, and I love meeting fellow writers because I think so many of us have just different approaches to writing, and I love the fact that you have this background in media, and I want to be able to go ahead and pick your brain. What I actually found out about you that sort of immediately stuck out was that we both sort of had the same path of, we're both from the Bay Area, we both moved to Texas, and for me, it's like, the culture shock was such a, like, an eye-opener going from the Bay Area, going to Texas. And so for you, I'm curious, like, do you still feel that there are certain parts of you that are like, oh, but this is the Bay Area side of me? Or do you think there are certain parts of you that have, like, shifted now that you're in Texas?
Well, disclaimer, my husband's a Texan, so let me speak carefully. I like the people in Texas, and the food is really, really great. So those are my favorite aspects of it. I will say that I'm probably way more liberal than some of my friends are down here in Houston. And the culture shock would be just some of the, we just grew up a little different in some aspects. You grow up around different demographics. Here in Houston, there's a large Nigerian population, so I've gotten a chance to get to know a lot of Nigerian Americans. Whereas back in Bay Area, I grew up with a lot of Eritreans and Ethiopians, as well as a lot of Filipinos. I have a few cousins who are Black and Filipino. So it's just a different demographics, and I've just been able to learn about different people since moving to Texas. I will say, I guess on the downside, it's way more conservative. As far as politics are concerned, I moved to Texas before Obama was elected. So I believe, but yeah, Bush was president. So to see that and to go through Obama's election, I was in college when he started, when he first ran for office. And it was one of those things where being in the South, I just noticed a difference. I vividly remember I had never seen a Confederate flag in real life. And so when I saw one on somebody's car, and I've seen them a few times in passing, especially when I've driven to Austin, you see it on some of the houses sometimes. That was new for me. I just thought you don't do that in public, but I live in Texas, so it's a little different. And as far as just politics are concerned, it's just a little bit more conservative in a lot of different ways. So that's been an adjustment for me.
Well, I'm curious to see how your whole sort of experiences, starting from your childhood to college, all the way up until the work that you've done, has sort of shaped the way that you are as a writer and as a content creator. So I actually wanted to go ahead and start off by asking you about what it was like after you graduated, because I know that you have mentioned that after graduating, and exactly, and it's like after you're graduating, you said that you were still trying to find your footing, you're still trying to figure out who you were. What was that like? What was your big break? And before you landed that job, like, were you stringing together odd jobs, or were you still were you did you take a little gap break? What were you up to?
So actually went to community college for a year. I went to Laney College in Oakland, and I hadn't even really thought about going to college. I just knew that I liked to write. That was something I really, really enjoyed. I liked reading and writing. Disclaimer, I'm terrible at math. Terrible. Just not great at it. Science, I'm not too great at it. English, history, politics are the things that I really enjoy. So I went to college. I actually landed in Texas because I wanted to go to a black college. I didn't know anything about black colleges outside of what I saw on A Different World. I didn't know anything about Greek life. I didn't grow up around it. We don't have any black colleges in California, with the exception of, it's like Charles Drew University, I think, but I believe that's a medical school. So we just didn't grow up around those type of things. And so I remember watching A Different World. That was one of my favorite shows when I was a kid. And I remember seeing like Dwayne and Whitley and the way they interacted on campus and all the organizations. And it just so happened that my foster mom actually talked me into going to college. So I went to community college. One of my professors was really, I took politics and history. One of them was really into Black history, and she happened to be a Delta, which is a Black Greek letter organization. So she was teaching us all about the Black history. I learned a lot just in her class, but she also taught us a lot about Southern traditions, which I didn't know anything about. So there was a Black college tour that actually came to downtown Oakland, and that was my first year ever hearing about it. So my professor talked me into going, and when I went, there was a lot of different colleges, Black colleges there. So I took some brochures and I sat down and applied, and I ended up getting into a few. So I ended up getting into Clark, and maybe I should back up, reverse. I thought about college a little bit, but I didn't really apply when I was in high school. So that's why I went to Laney College. So once I was there, then I started going through the actual, okay, maybe I'll go. And I applied for different schools. I got into Alabama State, Alabama A&M, which did not have, or in Tuskegee did not have the journalism program that I wanted to do. Got into Clark Atlanta, but they had some type of matriculation fee. And I also got into Texas Southern, which at the time, to be fair, I think Texas Southern was like open enrollment, but I just wanted to go to a college, a black college, and I figured Texas was the closest thing to California. I probably should have looked at the other ones, like they have Prairie View A&M. There's a lot of great colleges. I really wanted to go to Clark, but when I told my mom about the fees, she was like, no. So that one was out the window. And I was honestly too scared to move too far across the country. All I knew about the South was like stuff I'd seen on TV, and I hyped myself up, so I was just scared. So I figured Texas would be easy. So that's how I ended up getting into or moving to Houston. So when I moved to Houston, I went to Texas Southern for 2 years. And during my 2 years there, I was paying out-of-state tuition, which is really, really expensive. So I kind of had a choice. I was either had to move back home because it was just too much and we couldn't afford it, or I would have to try to find in-state tuition. So that's how I ended up transferring to University of Houston because they gave me in-state tuition. And so while I was in school, I started writing for it. When I transferred to U of H, I transferred in 2007. By that time, I had actually been in school for 3 years, but because I had transferred schools from Laney to Texas Southern to U University of Houston, I didn't, not everything transferred over. So I think I transferred to U of H, I think as a sophomore or a junior. I was not in the right year that I should have been, and that was my fault because I bounced around. So when I went to U of H, the good thing was I kind of got to start over in a way because I went straight into my major. So I did like maybe I think the first semester at U of H, I got a 1.3. 1.3. I came from TSU, like I did okay, went to U of H, and I just knew, oh, everything's gonna be good. 1.3 got put on academic probation. So my dad, for a backstory, my parents were divorced. My dad's in the was in the military. My mom was in the medical profession. So going back to my father, he was in the military and he was a hard ass in some ways. So I'm here I am. He's they're not paying for school, but they're helping me. My dad's helping, paying for my apartment, my car at the time. So what my dad did was he had bought me a car. And here I am. I got a brand new car. I've come back to Houston. But I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do. So he flew to Houston as if he was like coming to see me. He flew to Houston. I saw him when he flew in. He took my car because it was in his name and drove back to Ohio the same day. And that was my lesson. One, have things in your own name. Two, don't mess up. Like, do what you're supposed to do. If anybody's listening, you're in college and if your parents are helping pay for you, listen. Just listen if you, as far as you can, because parents aren't always right. But if you're just fucking up, can I say that?
Yeah, go ahead, go
Damn.
ahead.
If you're just fucking up like I was, because I got to U of H. I was partying, I was having fun. This was 2007, 2008. If you know anything about like the Texas music scene, I was having fun. It was some good music out. I was having fun doing a little bit too much. So he came and took my car, and that was kind of the wake up call. Well, not the full wake up call, but that was the start of it.
Was the
So
wake-up
I
call for the wake-up
for the wake up call. So basically, he was like, "I'm not gonna." Because he had paid for, I got kicked off of campus. Whole nother story when I was at Texas Southern. Whole nother story. I was used to live in these apartments called Greystone. So I ended up having to get my own apartment. And he helped me at first, but then he was like, you need to figure it out. So I was like, okay. So I was selling shoes at Dillard's. I used to sell men's shoes. I used to joke that I was the female Al Bundy. I sold men's shoes at Dillard's. So I was doing that. And I did like a lot of odd jobs to help pay for school. So I worked at Dillard's. I worked at Costco. I worked at o Office Depot as a cashier. I worked at CompUSA as a cashier. Side note, when you asked about the culture difference, the first time I ever got called a slur, I was working at CompUSA, to my face anyways. You hear it a
Really?
lot.
Well,
You hear
it
it a
was like a
lot
customer?
on, yeah, it was an irate customer, and I had only been in Texas maybe like 6 months, and he wanted to return a laptop, and we couldn't do it because it was the policy was it had to be like in a box and had to have the receipt, and he didn't have what he needed to have. So he starts going off, and he's like, "You Mexican," and I'm like, "Oh, I'm not even Hispanic."
Like your
I didn't
racism isn't
know.
even targeted the right way.
I'm like, "You're not even racism, right?" I was confused, and I don't know enough. I couldn't think of the slurs to throw back. I'm like, okay, do I call him a redneck? Do I call him a like? So I'm sitting. I don't know if anybody else does this, but you're supposed to be thinking of a quick retort, and normally I'm really quick, but I'm sitting there thinking of what I'm supposed to say, and he. And in real life, he said what he had to say and walk out the store. And I'm still standing there
And
trying to
you're just
figure
like
out.
confused, like what do I do?
Still there trying to come up with a response. And I was just confused. I remember I went home and I called my dad that day. And I was like, guess what I got called? And it was just, granted, California has racism too. Let's be clear. Let's be real clear there. Especially people always think of LA and the Bay Area and they forget there's a whole central
Oh
part of California. That's quite red, but that was my first time ever experiencing that to my face because he was just so matter of fact and went about his day. And I was still standing like I was mad. Like I went home mad,
Oh my
thought about the
gosh.
next day, like, how dare he? But to go back, yes, I've worked at a lot of odd jobs when I was in college, basically just trying to pay bills. And it just so happened I got into waitressing. I had a friend who was a waitress and she wanted me to go apply with her for a club. I'm like, I'm okay, I'll go, I'll drive you. So I went with her and she ended up getting hired and they hired me too. So I started waitressing. For a while, it was crazy because my Twitter name used to be Waitress Cecilia way back in the day. So I was waitressing. That was my first Twitter name. So I was waitressing and I was still selling shoes and I was still in college. So I was writing for the school paper. They started giving me little assignments, like little music assignments or politics assignments. I went to school for print journalism and political science. So I was writing for the paper. In my head, I'm like, oh, I'm gonna graduate soon. I'm gonna be the next Oprah. I'm gonna go work at CNN. I'm gonna move to Atlanta. I'm gonna do all this stuff. And that's not what happened, clearly. So what ended up happening as I got closer to graduation, I got an internship at see, it's a college here called HCC, Houston Community College, and the one downtown had like a little studio that had a public access channel. I think it's either channel 17 or channel 19. But I came on as an intern like my junior senior year, and I just wrote the scripts for one of their shows. Granted, this was not like fancy TV. It wasn't like anything substantial, but in my head, it was the big break. And I just knew that, okay, I'm going to graduate soon. They're going to hire me. And the crazy thing was, I got that internship and another internship at the same time. I turned down the one at, there's a, forget the name of the group, but you know that it's like the, not the Weather Channel, but it's some radar system in Houston and it keeps track of the freeways and the beltway. Got an internship there. My dad told me to take that internship. I didn't listen. I took this one instead. So when the internship ended and I was getting ready to graduate college, they were like, you know, we really like you, Cecilia, and we'll write you a letter of recommendation, but we don't have the funds to hire you. So I was like, oh, okay. So I'm right back at square one. It just so happened that for me, bar waitressing, and I later started bartending, I started meeting a lot of artists in clubs. So I'm meeting like a lot of different people. So I met a few different artists and I met a few DJs, and a DJ I knew wanted, he wanted to like launch a magazine. So he was like, okay, Cecilia, I have this artist I want you to interview, but I'm gonna send you the audio. Can you just write it? I'm like, okay. So the interview was for Waka Flocka. That was like 2008. So at the time, you know, he was a very substantial artist. So I transcribed it, wrote the article. I think it published, it might have published underneath the DJ's name, because at the time, like, I didn't know any better. I would just take assignments like, oh, sure, I'll write it. And so after that, I started just getting calls for different stuff. When I graduated college, I graduated in May 2010, graduated from University of Houston. Go Cougs. If you're not a fan of our football team, you know, I understand. It's up and down right now, but go Cougs. But I graduated in May 2010 and I was so excited and I just knew I was going to find a job, but I could not find anything. This was right during the recession. So a lot of newspapers were going under. I tried Houston Chronicle, I tried San Francisco Chronicle. I wanted to move home. My goal was to move home and then
Try to find
become
work
like
there.
this and try to find work there. But I couldn't find anything at home. And by that time, I had been living on my own. I got a taste of having my own apartment. I had a little car. I had another car that my dad did not pay for. So I was
In your
feeling
name.
real. It was in my name. So I was feeling real independent. So I figured, okay. And I didn't want to move to New York. Everybody always says you have to move to New York for everything. And in some cases, that definitely is true. I just feel like, one, I probably have a bias because I'm a West Coast girl. So no, I'm not moving to New York. Unless it's the white opportunity, holler at me. But in general, I just didn't want to move up there. And I didn't want to move to Atlanta for some reason, even though it's a great city for a lot of things. I just got used to Houston. So I decided to stay in Houston. And then at first I was still selling shoes. I left Dillard's. No, not gonna say I left. I got fired from Dillard's maybe a few months after I graduated because I you have to do commission.
Yeah.
And men's shoes just weren't selling well. And so I didn't make my sales quota for like 2 months. Didn't make my sales quota. A relationship that I was in was ending. We ended up leaving the apartment we were in. It was like a lot
Oh my
going
God. So it's
on.
like all this
So,
stuff changing and
yeah.
turning down and
My, yes. So, long story short, the relationship ended. We both had to leave the apartment. I had to find a new apartment. Thank God I was bartending. I, like 2 weeks, I was just club to club, club, making money to find a condo to move. So here I have this new place. I don't have a job anymore. All I'm doing is bartending, which, not to say it's not a job, but it's not stable. So I took a job for $11.50 at US Health. That was my first job out of college. And I was one of those people that when you're calling to learn about your insurance, or if you're an employee and you have US Health insurance, I would explain the benefits to you, and I would explain like how your FSA works and your HSA and all of those things. And I was making $11 an hour, and I was miserable.
Oh
I here I had
no.
this fancy degree, and in a few months Sallie Mae was calling, and I had no way to pay my student loans. So my options were to either move back home to California and stay on one of my sister's couches. And by this time, both my sisters had kids, so I really didn't want to burden them in that way, or move with my father, which I just didn't want to do. So I was like, I got to get it together. So I started reaching out to different publications I knew in the Houston area, and there were two. There was a young lady by the name of Jaleesa Floyd. She had a magazine called Clutch City Magazine. It's no longer in existence, but she let me write for her, which led to Houston Trend Magazine. So the owner of that magazine, his name is actually Elliot Guidry. So I don't even remember how I met him, but he's a photographer and he owns Houston Trend Magazine. So he used to be on the scene a lot. So we became cool. So once I got my degree, I'm like, hey, can I please write for you? I'll write for you for free. I
You
just
just
need to
want
get
to
my
get your foot
foot
in
in
the
the door.
door.
Now, let me tell any young writers, I wrote for free for a while. I'm not saying that you need to do that. If you can get your money, get your money. And I say that because so many people will take advantage of you if you allow them. They will
Oh
let you,
yeah.
and not saying that's what happened in that experience, but I have had other times where I either haven't gotten paid if there was money involved, or just things didn't pan out, or they want all this work and don't want to pay you. And I like the fact now that a lot of younger writers, there's more things at your guys' disposal. A lot of people are more savvy with social media. Even in 2010, I've had social media since Black Planet days. Woo. So Black Planet, I think, was high school. Then I had MySpace right after high school, like 2004. So I've had social media to see
You've
it
been there the
through.
whole time, yeah.
Yeah, for context, if anybody's counting, I'm 33. That'll maybe help connect the dots. So I went through the MySpace to the Facebook. Back when Facebook, you had to have a college ID to get a Facebook. So I implore all the young writers now to take advantage of these tools, because we just didn't really have those. We had social media, but a lot of us weren't taking advantage of the stuff that I see other people doing now, meaning doing podcasts and doing live streams. And I
All
just wanted
different
to
types of
write.
like content
I
platforms and
didn't think of no TikTok, no Snapchat. There was none of that. I just wanted to write. And so I think my early mistake was I didn't learn how to publicize myself till years later. I eventually started doing all these great interviews, but once it po posted, I didn't think to, okay, I need to plug this, because I just didn't feel comfortable marketing myself. It
'Cause
felt
you just
weird,
feel
almost
like
like
when you
you're
first
being
start
pretentious.
Yeah, like when you first start doing it, like you get this sort of self-conscious doubt where you're like
Yes.
am I
Like
talking too
how they
much about
say
myself
imposter.
and
No, that's what it is. And especially, I will say, like, even in journalism, I don't do a lot of interviews. I'm usually on the other side. It's rare that I've had to sit down and be interviewed, and it's always a odd thing, even though I like giving the information. It just feels weird because you're used to listening, writing about what's happening, showcasing someone else's story, not your own. So it was one of those things where I finally started getting assignments. So now I'm working for Houston Trend Magazine. And what I did was, there was a number of new artists that were coming up. Artists like, there's a gentleman named Propane, Dobeezy, a lot, just a lot of Houston artists that were kind of coming up at the same time that I graduated. So I got to know a lot of people and I would do their profiles. So for Houston Trend, they have like, they'll have a cover story that they release every few months. And I would sit down with an artist and we do a whole feature, like a whole cover story, and they would get a cover. And that's kind of how I made my way.
Wow.
So I started just interviewing different people and just kind of building up my resume. And once I did that, I ended up leaving Houston Trend maybe after 2-3 years into it. Mm-hmm. And I got on with a blog called Day in a Dream, which is actually still in existence. Mm-hmm. The owner or former, the person who founded Day in a Dream, he actually works for a radio station in 97.9 here in Houston. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have since gone on to other things. But I got on at Day in a Dream and that opened more doors. I eventually started writing for Houston Style Magazine, Houston Press, and then I started pitching myself nationally. So it just so happened that one of the artists that I had profiled in Houston needed a bio for MTV Jams. And so I wrote his bio and he referred me once he heard that there was an opening at All Hip Hop. So that's why I was like, it really helps building relationships because you never know who you're going to come across. Something I've noticed is that it sounds so cliche as hell, but I'll say it anyways. Mm-hmm. Being kind to people is a lot because there's just a lot of assholes in the industry. There's a lot of people who just want, I guess I'll use this word, just want clout for lack of a better definition.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just one of those things where, especially depending on what kind of writing you do. For clarity, I usually write about entertainment, politics, music, culture. When I say entertainment, though, I don't do gossip writing. To be clear, though, I read it. I just don't write it.
Yeah,
so for that, for me, it's meant focusing on the actual story. And that's worked for me because it's allowed me to develop relationships with people. There's stuff that, a lot of stuff that I've been on the scene on, I've seen. I don't haven't always reported on everything because sometimes I'm like, okay, is this really necessary? Do I need to hop on this just because it could be a story, or do I want to hold off because it might be too personal? Well, like, you know, I don't want to publicize anything that might be related to somebody's children or something like that.
Correct.
So
correct.
Those are some of the things that I actually learned in journalism school. So again, I got my degree in journalism. Mm-hmm. And I think the great part of that, and let me be clear, sometimes they try to divide us like the bloggers versus the journalists versus the writers. Mm-hmm. For me, there's people who are great journalists that never actually went to journalism school.
Correct.
And there are people who are bloggers or writers who never had any formal training and are fantastic at their job. Uh-huh. So you never want to take that away from anybody. What I will say is that there are some people that don't have some of the things that you're taught in journalism school as far as fact checking, knowing your sources, getting to the actual root of something. I think those are beneficial, and that I hate to see, like, especially on Facebook, when you see stories floating around that are obviously false and nobody took the time to verify it and people just start reposting it. So that's the downside that I've seen to the blogging world. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like there are so many good writers out there that I really don't like to focus on that.
Yeah.
But I will say it's helped me just because I do have a journalism background. So there are a few things that you learn that I feel like helped me in my career.
And they can apply.
Especially, it applies. You learn how to do AP writing. And especially if you're a writer that maybe wants to go into corporate communications, and I'll get into that later, that those are the things that definitely help, because a lot of the corporate communication roles, they want somebody with a bachelor's degree or some type of degree in either journalism or communication or marketing.
Yeah.
And sometimes on the job description, it'll put AP writing, Press Standards. So those are good things to know. But let me clarify, you don't have to go to journalism school to be a writer.
Yeah. And you make a good point about how so many different writers come from different backgrounds where, like, some people are more oriented in story-driven narrative. Like, I come from a copywriting background because I have a background in sales.
Oh, wow.
Like sales and blogging. And so much of that goes hand in hand. And so, you know, I naturally got into the advertising industry. And I think that also, perfectly leads into the next discussion, which I actually want to pick your brain on your writing process. I think that one of the hardest things to do as a professional writer is to, like, once you actually start having to deal with clients and having to write on time, write on schedule, write on a particular topic that you might not be fully interested in or you might not be fully knowledgeable about. For you, have you liked all of your writing jobs? And are there certain there certain topics like are there certain topics that you feel like, okay, I really love writing about this and I hated writing about that?
Okay, so I was doing music writing for a long time, and keep in mind, I originally went to school for journalism and politics, so I really love politics. Mm-hmm. Political writing was probably my favorite thing to do and probably still is now.
Mm-hmm.
The hardest thing was once I got into music writing, you kind of get put into a box, meaning that especially once I got some of these larger publications, at All Hip Hop, for example, I started out doing, like, if there was a new song posted, I would write a quick blurb. Hey, so-and-so collaborated with this producer and they created a banger. It gets to the point where it becomes repetitive almost.
Yep.
And I still love music to this day. I think I just kind of got burnt out. And then on top of the fact that once, you know, you start doing a little bit more and taking them on work, then you have music in your inbox all the time. People left flyers on my car, like with their mixtape and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I liked being able to engage with new artists, but sometimes it was just like, oh my God,
too much on your plate.
It was a lot. So I just wanted to do other things. So I ended up at All Hip Hop and I started doing their news writing. So in the evenings, after a while, I was still working by day, I would get home and sit down and write like their little evening news posts. I was responsible for doing like 5 to 6 a day. And from that, I just built up a few more news samples so that I was able to apply to Atlanta Black Star. I was a political writer there. I applied to AARP. And some of this happened more recently. Like, I was actually at Atlanta Black Star. I started there, 2019? Started there, 2016, I think. So that's, and I've since left. So that's a little bit more recent. But being able to branch out and do other things opened up more doors, because you do get kind of pigeonholed sometimes, especially it turns into, oh, the music writer. Well, I didn't go to school to be a music writer. I liked being a music writer, but I never considered myself a music writer. Music was just one of the other things I wrote about. So in 2015, I decided to start a writing agency, and I launched something called Yellow Bandit Media. I'll clarify. So Bandit is a nickname of mine. My name is Cecilia. I have a nickname, Cece. Most of my family and anybody from California calls me Cece. I actually didn't start going by Cecilia until I moved to college. So that was my chance to
start
go
fresh.
By my actual full name. Uh-huh. So, because my mother doesn't even call me Cecilia unless I'm in trouble, then it's Cecilia. So out here, I go by simply Cecilia. That's my pen name, but my regular name is just Cecilia. My nickname is Bandit, and that came from the fact that anybody knows me, I love comics. I love Batman. Let me specify this. My three favorite characters, or four, are Batman, Wolverine, Deadpool, and I'm going to add Storm in, Honorary Mansion, because I love Storm too. And then I would add an Iron Man, so that rounds up my top five. But I prefer Marvel, but I love Batman, who comes from DC. I just had a friend who started calling me Bandit, and it stuck. And so everybody calls me either Cece or, no, take it back. Everybody at home calls me Cece. Everybody here either calls me Cecilia or Bandit. So that kind of stuck. Yellow is my favorite color. It's my mom's favorite color, too. I just love the color yellow. It's just happiness. That's just my favorite color. So it just kind of stuck. So when I launched my writing agency, I called it Yellow Bandit Media. So when I launched, my idea was to bring other writers together, because a lot of us, at least in Houston, a lot of us know each other because we've been in the same places. A lot of times, if I can't take an assignment, I'll hit so-and-so up like, hey, Brando, can you do
pass
the story,
it on.
Bradford? Yeah, because why not? I will say in Houston, at least the writers I know have been great at helping one another out, because it's just not a big media market. Houston is a huge city, but even our media, they're not hiring people that live here. They usually bring somebody else in. So the underground scene is huge here. And that's something that really helped me with connections. So once I got to All Hip Hop, they used to be at South by Southwest every year. And so my editor there, he used to be over the showcase. They had something called the Vibe House. And then after that, they had like All Hip Hop Presents. And they would have a concert. So I was like, hey, I live in Texas, because I was one of the only writers that lived in Texas. Everybody else was in New York. So I started pushing them, Houston artists, like, hey, you guys need to have so and so at this show. And at first they had me on the door. So the first concert I went to, I believe it was like 2014, 2015, I was at the door and I was, handing out tickets to people as they walked in. And I was okay with that because I just wanted a chance to be involved with the showcase in whatever way. I was like, hey, I'll do it. I will say, being open to opportunities, there's been lots of things that I fell into. Like if I could sit down and write a life story, half the concerts I've been to, half the shows I've been to, there's a time at South by Southwest, there was a year when Erykah Badu performed. Great performance. After her, Nas performed, I was able to get on stage. Don't ask me how. I just found a way on there. A gate though, writers, please be prepared. When he was done performing, that would have been my chance as he was walking, past to, I should have asked the question. I could have used that question to write a recap. What did I do? I said, hard. And this was like not too long after college. I was like, hi. So, and that never happens to me, but please be prepared. I'm looking at all you writers, be prepared. Never do that. I've rarely like fluffed when dealing with artists or celebrities, but I really fluffed there. And one, because I was not prepared. I wasn't even expected to be there. We were just able to get into the show. So I was probably taking shots.
But
It
I
was a
think what's
great
cool about like
day.
your story, especially, you explaining how you started off and, going from jobs like, working
Sell
in
shoes.
retail and selling shoes. Yeah. And it's like you talking about, really being open to so many of these different opportunities, especially when it comes to writing, because the interesting thing about writing opportunities is that like it really takes one good piece, and that one piece could
Can
be
go viral.
exactly, not only can it go viral, but it could be the reason why that another company of a completely different topic hires you. Like, oh, you wrote that, so you have experience interviewing people, or you have experience writing about technology or whatever. And so like I think that your story really is a testament to branching out, and like I guess like
You can
sometimes.
branch out.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem that a lot of writers get into, is that they're trying to figure out, okay, well, how do I make money based off of my writing? But so many of them are just like, well, I write this and I'm only going to write that. But I think in your case, like just being open to different types of writing projects will really, and also being open to just networking and, being kind to other people.
And I will say, networking is hard for me sometimes. I, as outgoing as I can be, I really value my personal space.
Oh yeah.
I like to, after I reach a certain limit through the day, I have to go home and
You have to
decompress.
recharge.
It's hard. Like small talk, for example, has always been really hard for me, because in my head I'm like, okay, did I say the wrong thing? Can we just get to the point? Like I just
Me
it's always been
too.
hard. So that's something that I've worked on, especially as I've gotten older. I had to join Toastmasters, for example. I'm actually in a Toastmasters chapter. I'm the VP of my chapter. And it's crazy because if you were to talk to one of my middle school teachers, and she loves to share this story, Miss Allegrotti, I went to Encino High, Alameda, California. She loves to tell the story. When I was in her middle school class, she later went to Encino to teach, but I was called to present Harry Potter. And this is how, we are getting up there. Harry Potter came out when I was in sixth grade. So this was a brand new book, and I was supposed to present it to the class, my little book review. And I got up there and started to talk and started crying and ran out the room. And she, to this day, she will not let me live this down. So when I got to college, I was still like, and mind you, in high school, I was a cheerleader. I was in band. I was on dance team.
Super
So I could
active.
do, I was super active, but, and I was in theater too. If Les Mis, I was a lovely lady. That's a nice way of saying prostitute, but I was in that musical for high school. So it was one of those things where I was outgoing in some ways, but when it came to my career, it was just harder. So I had to force myself. So I actually took speech writing in college, and I took public speaking just to get a little better at
Oh,
it.
it that so
But
helps. I did public speaking, and it's
it helps.
like once you
when you have a class dedicated to that and then you learn that like, hey, actually that feeling of like performing is actually kind of exciting.
Yes. It's kind of exciting. Like even now, I still get nervous, but there's been I go speak in school sometimes, and there was one time when I'm thinking I'm gonna go speak in a classroom, and they're like, "No, you need to go speak in front of the auditorium." And I'm like, and a few years before that, I wouldn't have been able to do that, but because I've taken classes and I now I just have more of a, you know what, fuck it, if whatever happens, happens. It's what it is. So now I kind of just. You get anxiety, and that's something that I deal with. But sometimes just being able to take deep breaths and tell myself, okay, Cecilia, did you die? Are you gonna die? So that's sometimes it's really hard. But that's like when I launched the writing agency, I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew that people were asking me to write stuff for them based off work that I had previously done. So I had written a lot of bios for a lot of different artists. I wrote a few bios for radio DJs in Houston. And then I was actually one of my first assignments when I launched my writing agency, I was approached to help write the content for the DJ Screw website. As you know, DJ Screw is a legend in Houston. So let me say this, never be, if you don't know something, do not be afraid to reach out to other people. And I say this because I had just started the agency. So I reached out to one of the writers who was kind of subcontracting through my agency. And basically, I was just writing creative content for people. If you need a bio, if you need website content, in my head, I'm like, I can write, I can figure this out. So that's what we provided. And I teamed up with a writer from Houston because one, I was happy for that opportunity, but I felt like something of that magnitude needed somebody that was actually from Texas to give it context because I'm not from Houston. So I didn't want to mess anything up because that's big for them. That'd be like for me, like Mac Dre or something. I don't want you writing about him and you don't know anything about the Romper Room. You don't know anything about him. So I brought another writer in and we were able to get it done. But from there, I just got other writing projects. I will say I did kind of get started getting I started getting burnt out on the music aspect. And that's when I started branching into different things. One, because I felt like I was charging too low. I was tired of having to chase people down. Like if I wrote a bio for you, I shouldn't have to chase you down for $100. It's $100, which is still, that's I can use that, but I'm not going to chase you down for it. And that was the frustration early on.
It just wasn't worth
I
it.
didn't have structure. Just wasn't worth it. I didn't have structure when I started out, and that's why, like, I'm actually one of the co-leads for Houston's Freelancer Union chapter. That's why I've joined so many organizations because when I was starting out, there were so many people that they're, and I don't blame them. Like, you don't have to give anybody any information. It is what it is. A lot of us had to figure it out. But for me, if I can give you the information so you don't have to learn the hard way like I did. It just makes more sense because there's just too many things that I had to learn the hard way. So that's why I started writing in different avenues. And I always kept freelancing because I really like entertainment. So I love being able to, oh, so you get to, I've seen like all the Marvel movies that came out. I saw all those in advance because I wrote the reviews for them. So stuff like that is cool. But it was one of those things where I realized I wanted to do more. So I started leveraging the publications I was at. Like when I was at All Hip Hop, when I said I started at the door, I went from working the door to being one of the stage managers. And that took 2 or 3 years, but I put the work in. So when it came time to when they had like their last showcase, and it was a big showcase, but they allowed some Houston artists to be on because I pushed for them. So they ended up having like Trey the Truth performed, shout out to Trey. They had the Sauce Twins, love them. Roosh Williams, he actually became an attorney. He's an artist in Houston, so Roosh is dope. Came an attorney, he was a Houston artist, moved to LA, became a music attorney, and still does music now. So I just thought that was incredible. But being able to kind of push for some of these people, because again, a lot of people are in New York. And there's just a different perception of West Coast and Southern artists. So here I am, like, no, you need to listen to this person. They're dope. And they're like, who is that? So it was cool being able to push that. And one of the last years that they did a showcase, it was really nice. And I realized, okay, I can do more than just write. I liked being a writer, but I
You just
always
realize
wanted
that
to
you
do so
have
much
like
more.
Yeah, you just realize that you have so much more like in the tank, and I think that's the amazing thing about working in media, especially if you're a naturally creative person. Like, because for me, it's like I have an interest in visual arts or photography or cinematography, and it's like luckily media does offer a lot of those opportunities.
And your videos, I've seen some of the videos that you put together on your topics when you were just starting off your blog. Because again, for those that are just tuning in, so I've been a fan of his page for a long time. I've been following since you first started. I became aware as your Facebook following got a little bit bigger, but it's been at least 3 years now.
Oh my gosh.
So you guys will see me. I'm very heavy in the comments, especially any topic that's like relates to people of color. I'm just gonna say people, black people, Filipinos, East Asian, whatever. I'm in there. So it's like seeing him evolve, it's been really dope. So when you said that you were gonna start branching out, I remember at first you said that you wanted to maybe start an agency. Mm-hmm. And then I saw that you started doing videos, and that's why I was like, you might have an original plan and it may not work out, but it's the fact that you took leaps and your brand has continued to grow. That's part of it.
Thank you for listening to another installment of Lag Radio. Lag Radio is an independently produced podcast recorded and edited here in my home office. So I appreciate any and all support. Whether you share this podcast with your friends on social media or sign on to become a sponsor, there are plenty of ways that you can help out. Speaking of which, if you're a small business owner or a person of color who wants to promote your platform, business, or brand, contact me and you can become a sponsor of Lag Radio. We'll have you sponsor some of our episodes, and you can even join on to be a guest of the show. If you'd like to listen to previous episodes, you can find Lag Radio on anchor.fm/lagradio, or you can listen on any major podcasting app like Google, Spotify, or Apple.